Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Bing, bing, bong, 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 boom, bong. I love that song. There is a guy, Systematics is his name, and he was a listener of the show. And he was around, this was at the beginning, and when it was UFO Think Tank, and he gave us that audio. He does all kinds of cool songs. He's like, use any of my songs you want. He used to have a MySpace with his music up and stuff, and he had a YouTube, and it's all disappeared. And now people are asking me, where's that music come from? That's great, man. But yeah, the guy is not around anymore. It is really cool music. And if you're out there, Systematics, thank you so much for letting us use it, because I love it. But, you know, especially this one dude, quit calling me and asking me. I can't get you the info. Sorry, dude. This is Open Minds Radio, and I am Alejandro Rojas. Thank you so much for joining us and talking some UFOs with us. Well, you're listening, but you may be talking at the radio, which is just fine, you know, if you're driving down the road and you're like, no way, man, that's not real. Hey, you guys are boneheads. That UFO is real. You know, talk to us. Even if we can't hear you, it's fun. And I think somehow, in a subconscious level, we do hear those things, you know. Even if they don't speak with their voice and just mentally, I think somehow subconsciously your message gets across. And, you know, that's great. You know, we're all one, brothers and sisters. Anyway, thank you for listening. We have a great show tonight. Our guest is Paola Harris, and I know I'm not saying that right. It's an Italian name. Everybody says Paula, so I mostly call her Paula, and she's fine with that because us Americans have a hard time saying Paola. I think it's that, like Paola, Paola Harris. But anyway, she's on the show, and we're going to be talking about her Women's UFO Conference that is coming up in May. Pretty exciting. A lot of the women in her conference have been on our show and are women that I know and adore, and they're great people. And so that'll be a lot of fun. Also, we're going to talk about a woman she interviewed recently named Kim Arnold. She wrote an article on her interview that's going to be in Open Minds magazine, and that's very exciting. And this is a woman who is the daughter of Kenneth Arnold. And if you've watched a UFO documentary on television, then you know who Kenneth Arnold is, because they all start off with Kenneth Arnold, the beginning of modern UFO research, with his sighting in 1947. And he was a pilot that had a sighting of a UFO, and he said it looked like discs that were skipping on water. And so some brilliant writer back then did it, flying saucers seen by Kenneth Arnold. They named them flying saucers, even though they weren't necessarily saucer-shaped what he saw, kind of more of a round horseshoe type of thing. But one thing that we do not know that Paula was able to uncover in this interview is that he had several sightings, and I didn't know that. I don't think anybody knew that until recently. So we're going to talk to Paula about that. We'll talk to her about more UFO stuff, because she's always out there in Europe doing tours and involved with this whole subject. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So, and I think it's something that you're very much going to enjoy. I certainly had a good time talking to her when we recorded this earlier. So, Paula Harris on the show. Yay! However, before that, I do want to make a mention, of course, about the UFO Congress. This is this little Congress thing. I don't know if I told you about this before. We're going to have this little conference out here in the Phoenix area, in the Posse Scottsdale area. In fact, PGA is going to be out there next week. That's how fancy this area is, all the Richie Riches. And I'm sure some of them are going to hang out for this UFO Congress. Who wouldn't? So we're having this cool UFO conference with lots of cool people, Stephen Greer and Whitley Strieber and our good buddy from Factor Fake, Ben Hansen, my good buddies who we had on the show recently, Bryce Zabel and Lee Spiegel. And then lots of our other friends are going to be there. Stan Romanek, you guys saw him last year. You loved him. He's going to be there signing books. Paula, our guest tonight, is going to be there also signing books and selling books. So it's just going to be a lot of fun. A lot of people are there, and you can come meet and mingle and talk. And so go to UFOCongress.com and register, because time is running out. It's going to be February in like 2 days, and this conference is February 22nd. So you really have to move quickly to make your plan to buy your plane tickets and figure out, you know, what your in-law or your parents, wherever you're going to send your kids and your dogs and stuff, so they can be taken care of while you're gone. So you don't have long to take advantage of all this and then come to the Congress. So you better get on the ball, people. It's going to be a lot of fun. One of the people you're going to be able to see there is this extraordinary fella who follows UFO news, and he writes about it practically every day. This guy is remarkable, and almost as remarkable as his vast UFO knowledge and the great job he does on following the news is his hair. He's got kind of this, sometimes it's a real mohawk, sometimes today it's more of a faux, but his hair sticks up in the air. It's very exciting, and I love it, and you're going to love it too. So come to the Congress and meet our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, who is actually here with me today to talk some UFO news. Jason, how are you?
I am always wonderful, Alejandro. How are you?
Good, good.
Good. I'm glad you approve of my hair so
much.
I
love it.
You spend a lot of time talking about my
know.
Hair.
It's so fun. It's awesome.
Excellent. I'm glad it gets the point across.
Mm-hmm.
Well, greetings, everyone. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, January 30th, 2012. And as Alejandro mentioned, the UFO Congress is right around the corner. And if you are going to be there, please do come up and say hello. Alejandro and I love meeting listeners. It's fun to meet people in real life. So please do come up and say hello. And
even if we're busy, we may say, hey, hi. And
yeah, don't be offended or think that we don't like you if we kind of – it seems like we brush you off. We are going to be very busy, but still we would very much like to meet you. And I had the pleasure of meeting – a handful of our listeners out in L.A. this past weekend from the good buddies at The Simpsons.
So, yeah, that's awesome. You got to tell the story a little bit.
Well, I went out and had a great weekend in California and got a chance to stop by The Simpsons office and say hello to a lot of our listeners there. We've got a big crowd at The Simpsons, so we definitely appreciate those guys. And
so
it was
awesome.
Fun to meet them and spent a very brief time interrupting their busy work to talk about UFOs, but it was a blast. So.
And we're Simpsons fanatics, worshippers.
Yeah, so it was a super treat for me.
And I love Futurama. I'm crazy about it.
Well, I'm sure they'd like to hear that.
Yep.
Well,
love it, guys.
All right. Well, let's get into some UFO news. Well, here's an interesting story from last week. American author Henry Miller apparently had an interest in UFOs. It turns out that the famous author became fascinated by the UFO subject when the so-called flying saucers first emerged in American popular culture in the late 40s and early 50s. He referenced Donald Kehoe's work in two of his books. Miller even describes his own UFO sighting in his book Big Sur and the Oranges of Hieronymus Bosch. And this is an interesting story that our colleague Antonio Huneas dug up and put together a pretty cool article on our website right now, Open Minds TV. So check that out. That's kind of interesting. And Alejandro, when I hear Henry Miller's name, it reminds me of Seinfeld. You and I are also big Seinfeld people.
Mm-hmm.
And this reminds me of the episode with the library cop.
Oh,
he
right.
Comes after Jerry because Jerry has the overdue Henry Miller book, Tropic of Cancer.
You know what's funny, too? You hear a lot about Henry Miller, and he's kind of like the quintessential author. But I don't think we had to read any of his books in school. Or
well,
I was an avid reader in school, and I don't think I ever read one.
I think a lot of schools banned his works.
Oh, okay.
Because they're so naughty.
Oh, they're naughty books.
Yes, very naughty books. So they're on a lot of schools' banned lists.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Even more intriguing.
Yeah. That's why Jerry wanted to read it, and then George wanted to borrow it because they were so risque and so exciting.
All right.
Yeah.
Like their favorite movie, Rochelle.
That's right.
An erotic
journey
from
Milan to Mint.
From Milan to Mint. Wow, interesting. That's really cool that he was into UFOs.
Yeah,
too.
And you should have seen Antonio when he made this discovery. He was so excited. It was like a schoolboy.
Yeah. Cool.
Guess what I'm going to write about? But, yeah, so he's got that article on the website right now,
cool.
So check that out. And it's always interesting when we have stories that, I mean, he's not necessarily a celebrity, but he's definitely a well-known, you know, person in popular culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the literary circle, you don't see UFOs a lot in that literary circle. It's more in the science circle.
Mm-hmm. Or even if they do have an interest, you just don't hear about it as much, I guess.
You are right.
So great discovery by Antonio.
Way to go, Antonio. Well, here's a story I enjoyed from last week. It's kind of a funny situation here. Well, Leonid Ksenfomalyi, professor at the Moscow-based Space Research Institute and member of the Russian Academy of Sciences, recently published findings in the Solar System Research Journal claiming that photos from Russia's 1982 Venera 13 landing probe shows life on Venus. According to the Telegraph, the scientist claims that multiple objects, specifically a disc-shaped object and an object with a scorpion-shaped body, appear in the photos, and they appear to, quote, emerge, fluctuate, and disappear. He explains in his paper, quote, what if we forget about the current theories about the non-existence of life on Venus? Let's boldly suggest that the object's morphological features would allow us to say that they are living, end quote. But according to MSNBC, quote, outside analysis suggests he is breathing life into an assortment of camera lenses, camera lens covers, and image blurs, end quote. One person who doubts the Russian scientist's conclusion is Jonathan Hill, a research technician and mission planner at the Mars Space Flight Facility at Arizona State University. Hill processes many of the images taken during NASA's Mars missions, so he's familiar with examining photos from landing probes. It is his opinion that the disc-shaped or crab-like objects, the object is simply a mechanical component. He supports his theory by explaining that the same object is visible in a photo taken by an identical Venus landing probe that landed nearby. Hill postulates, if those objects were already on the surface of Venus, what are the chances that Venera 13 and 14, which landed nearly 1,000 kilometers apart, would both land inches away from the only ones in sight, and they would be in the same positions relative to the spacecraft? It makes much more sense that it's a piece of the lander designed to break off during the deployment of one of the scientific instruments. According to MSNBC, it is NASA's opinion that the crab-like objects in the photos are, quote, camera lens covers that popped off the Venera probe after they landed. And the scorpion-shaped body is simply digital noise in the photos. And you wrote about this too, Alejandro. What do you think about the claims made by this Russian scientist?
Well, the claims, he has yet to sufficiently, obviously, make his argument. However, he says, you know, he made this discovery in the 80s, which was when this probe was on Venus, and that he was too shy to talk about it because he thought, you know, nobody's going to believe this. So it's only recently, with all of the planets out there being discovered that could harbor life, that he felt more secure. Hey, maybe this will be looked at in a better light than it would have back then. So he's released his material. He says he's got more material and he's going to write some more. So I think he still needs to, because it does look, you know, it's hard to make it things out from what he's saying. But, you know, to his point, too, some of the he's talking about things that are moving around for 25 minutes. So not something that is just laying there or perhaps, you know, being blown away by the engines of the lander as it lands. So I guess it's yet to be seen. I think some of the arguments are really kind of ridiculous. Here you have these scientists coming and saying, it's a good point to make that the temperature on Venus is very hot, like 800 degrees Fahrenheit, over 500 degrees, something like that. So it's extremely hot, so it's most likely life couldn't live there. But they're saying, you know, some of these scientists are coming out and saying, oh, it's impossible. I haven't seen the video, but it's impossible because it's too hot there. Well, how do we know? We don't know. I mean, you can't discount these things until you yourself look at this video, like the guy you talked about, Johnson?
I think his name was? The guy from ASU?
Oh, Jonathan Hill.
Jonathan Hill, yeah.
Right. Yeah, at least he looked at it, you mm-hmm. know, and studied it to see what he thought. So he has a more credible opinion and a more educated one since he actually looked at the images. But just to blow it off alone because it's too hot, you know, too hot, too cold, whatever. We don't know much about where life can grow, and we've
right.
found it in so many places where we didn't think we would that at least those arguments, you know, fall a little short. At least give the guy the respect to take a look at his work before you make an opinion.
Yeah. These hasty, just flippant dismissing
mm-hmm.
without bothering to take a look, it's really insulting.
Yeah. And of course, I'm rooting for him. How exciting would that be if we do find something? I mean, even, you know, Paul...
Davies,
right, from ASU was talking about, or from, the possibility of looking at pictures we already have of the moon to find evidence of life. So maybe there is data we already have collected that does demonstrate something, and how exciting, how cool would that be?
That'd be so cool, and I would love to look at those photos, but, you know, I'm not a trained person at looking at those photos, and I think it would waste a lot of time having somebody who has no idea what they're looking at or looking for.
Yeah.
To look at the photos, but, and again, that's a good reason to have this guy from ASU who has looked at Mars images, you know, at least that's more to go on. He knows more what he's looking for and knows more of the typical glitches that are seen in photos.
Right.
I know NASA, like, they've done that a lot recently, explain things as camera glitches, and while that's probably the case, you know, that's also jumping to a conclusion a lot of the times, I think. There could be something. I mean, you've seen some of these photos from the rovers, and they're not always in focus. Even the rocks on the ground are kind of blurry and stuff.
Right.
So to say something that you see sort of farther away that's kind of blurry is, oh, that's an image glitch. Might jump to conclusions a little fast there. But
well, we're rooting for you, Dr. Kasanfomalati.
There you go.
We need to learn how to say his name, I guess.
I think we need to learn Russian.
Yeah.
Because Russia has been in the space news a lot lately.
I know. So. They're, I don't know, you would almost say they're the space forerunner right now.
Well, they're certainly putting the pressure on.
They're giving us our rides to the space station, so.
Yeah. Well, because of that, let's see. Let's go into the next story. Space travel, space exploration, and the search for extraterrestrial life were hot topics in 2011, and it is my prediction that these topics will be discussed even more in 2012. Current space exploration projects, planned missions, private space companies, and the emergence of the space tourism industry are all contributing to the new space race, as countries around the world are pushing to put more people in space and on celestial bodies. The space topic was brought up at the recent 2012 Republican candidates debate in Florida. When asked about the space race, Newt Gingrich stated that he would like to see the U.S. go back to the moon permanently, implying the colonization of the moon. And he thinks a priority should be, quote, getting to Mars as soon as possible, end quote. He also shared his opinion that, quote, building a series of space stations and developing commercial space is something the U.S. should do. Mitt Romney also stated that space travel should be a priority for the country. And the day after that debate, Newt Gingrich went on to say that the moon should be the 51st state of the United States.
We claim the moon. Yeah. I'm sure the rest of the world would love that.
Yeah.
Paint the whole thing red, white, and blue like a flag, so when we look up there, it looks like the American flag.
Yeah, I'm sure that's his plan, too.
And the thing is, this is low-lying political fodder. I mean, it's easy to say right now, we need to go to the moon, and, you know, I'd say that. That's great, but, of course, how do you make that happen when budgets are so tight and at the same time you're screaming to cut funding on everything? So it's great fodder for them because, of course,
it is. But
Obama has not done much with space travel. So.
Right. He's basically said that doesn't interest him. And
he's done more of a Republican thing. He's privatized it.
Right. Well, and I will say this. I am not ashamed to say that I'm not a fan of Newt. I'm not a fan of Mitt. But they both do make good points, and, you know, with their support of space exploration and going to the moon, going to Mars, they both agree with that point that the key to doing that is not using public funds, but privatizing spaceflight. Using that, giving private companies incentives to develop the technology to get us there.
Which is essentially what's going on.
Exactly.
So.
Yep. So we'll see what happens. But, Newt says that if he's elected in his second term in 2020 – you'll have a base on the moon.
And it does, I mean, the base on the moon makes a lot more sense than the International Space Station. And a lot of scientists were saying that at the time, because that's someplace that's easier to maintain, cheaper, and it's a launching point. It's a better place to launch on missions to Mars or other places from.
Right. Here's an interesting entertainment story from last week. Fran Drescher claims she was abducted by extraterrestrials. The actress, best known for her annoying role as the title character in the 90s sitcom The Nanny, she recently told the Huffington Post that both she and her ex-husband were abducted by extraterrestrials before they met each other. And she claims the situations in which they were each abducted are similar. She explained that her abduction occurred when she was in junior high, when she was a teenager. She was driving down the road with her father. Her ex-husband, also in junior high at the time, was abducted while driving down the road with his father. Drescher stated, quote, "A few years later we met, and we realized we had the same experience. I think that somehow we were programmed to meet," end quote. She even theorizes that an alien implant could be how the extraterrestrials programmed her actions. She claims that her ex-husband has one too. She explained, quote, "We both have the same scar. It's in the same, it's the exact same scar in the exact same spot. That's where the chip is." It's an interesting story, and when it came out, I think a lot of people thought she was joking around, but she is 100% serious.
Yeah, she told this to the Huffington Post reporter. He says, what's his name, Rob Nasty, or Nasty but Nice Rob?
Something like that.
Name. But, and according to this guy, she was very serious, so, I mean, it was kind of just three sentences that she said in this interview that he highlighted and now has become a big story about her, and she seems to be really believe this happened, so
yeah,
very interesting.
It is interesting, and I we haven't heard confirmation from her ex-husband. I know he's commented on the scar before, and he disagrees with her about the scar, and there was something about...
But right, he didn't comment on the event, which
right.
She says took place when she was in middle school and him somewhere else,
right,
in another part of the
separate
country.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know each other.
Around the time frame had a similar experience, so...
Right.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll ever speak about it, and what does it say that he's not? Could it be that he just doesn't want to talk about it, and he does think something happened?
Maybe. But, you know, this was in the news last week, and it continues to be in the news this week, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's sort of pressured into giving a response or addressing the issue, because people will ask about it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, well, here's a sighting story. A man in Scarborough, England, saw a UFO last week, and it freaked him out. Billy Kirk saw a strange ball of light over his home that he described as a stationary white light. Kirk explained to the Scarborough Evening News, quote, "I'm still in shock. I can only describe it as a big ball of light. I was scared. I just ran in the house and said to my girlfriend, I'm not going back out there. I didn't know what to think. I've never been a big believer in things like that, but I can't explain it. It definitely wasn't the Northern Lights, an aircraft, or a Chinese lantern. I thought of everything. I didn't want to say anything at first, but I thought it should be reported. It could be a danger to our airspace."
Yep.
And I think the Scarborough Evening News did a recreation, an illustration of what the object was like in relation to him. Has him standing outside in his yard, and there's this ball of light kind of zooming towards him. Freaked me out.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and it just shows, because I mean, of you got to take it with a grain of salt when it's on the front page of the Sun. But, I mean, just shows, and we'll talk with Paula about this a little bit, how interested they are in Europe about, you know, this subject.
Oh, yeah. And let's do one more, Alejandro. This is another sighting story. Mysterious lights were seen in the sky above Utah County in Utah on Friday night. The lights were identified on Sunday when local resident Andrew Smith came forward to claim responsibility. The illuminated UFO was a creation of his that consisted of helium-filled garbage bags and flashing LED lights attached to a wire frame. According to KSL Channel 5 in Utah, Smith created his UFO as part of a contest to promote a website. And Smith even claims that he's been launching similar craft for 10 years. He explained, quote, "I don't think it's fair for me to do this in good fun and then sit back and let everyone be in the dark and not know or not let them know what's really going on. Of course, even if you tell them what it was, a lot of them still won't believe you." And that's a true statement there. But this is an interesting one. It was creating a lot of buzz in the Four Corners area, and I even saw this on a news report in Colorado. They were reporting on the mysterious lights Friday. So, this guy came forward and says, yeah, I do it all the time.
And that's great. I mean, sure, there's going to be people who aren't going to believe that he hoaxed it, and that's happened with every hoax in the past. I mean, there are even some of the big hoaxes, like the most popular UFO video on YouTube, the Haiti one, which The guy has come out and admitted he hoaxed, and some people still believe that it's real.
Well, and I wouldn't go so far as to say this guy hoaxed anything, because it doesn't seem like he's trying to fool people, because he wants to come forward and let people know what's going on.
Yeah, he didn't try to
and
fool, but
and his stuff doesn't exactly look like a UFO. I mean, it's really colorful.
And I'm using the term not that he maliciously anything, but that he created. Just to make the point that it's still good that these guys come out and let people know, because not everybody is not going to take his word for it. A lot of people will say, oh, okay, great, thank you, you know, I didn't know what it was I saw. And most of the UFO witnesses that I've talked to as a MUFON investigator and everything, they just want to know what it was, you know. They don't necessarily have a preconceived notion that it's an extraterrestrial and that's what it had to be. They want to know what it was, and when they get an answer and they figure it out, often they're very happy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a good example of something like this is the New Orleans NFL video from last year.
Right.
You know, that's something that, you know, Lee Spiegel from the Huffington Post was contacted by the NBC photographer who took that footage of this weird object moving behind the cathedral. And he provided footage showing how he creates this time-lapse video and has the original footage of the airplanes flying by, and said, when I was sitting there waiting for this half-hour process to finish, I was watching the airplanes fly by coming in for a landing at the nearby airport. But there were plenty of people who didn't want to accept that explanation, even though the proof was right there.
Yeah. So.
Tough. You can't make everyone happy.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah, you know, we're looking for the truth here. We're looking for the credible stuff that we know
right.
is out
and,
there.
And you said it before. I mean, yeah, we're kind of disappointed when, you know, it's not something as exciting as we thought it would be. But, you know, that's what we're after. We're after the truth.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be fooled and be excited about something that's nothing. I mean, we want to find what the real answer is.
I don't want to be staring at a balloon that I think is ET trying to figure out the technology behind this extraterrestrial craft. When it's not, I'd rather be told it's not, and now I'm not wasting my time. I'm
right.
looking at stuff that is more credible.
I'm right there with you, buddy. Well, Alejandro, that is it for the news. Remember, guys, you can check out all these stories and so many more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. And if you have a news tip or anything else you'd like to say, you can always email me at jason@openminds.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at acecentric. All right, guys, I am Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
Thank you, Jason. Another great UFO briefing by Jason McClellan. Also, remember, you can see these at UFODailyNews.com. That's where I have my website, and I got some of these news stories up as well. We're both kind of out there covering everything and tweeting on this stuff, too. So don't forget to follow our other social networks, which many of you do, our Facebook and our Twitter. And Twitter's a lot of fun. I got to say, I wasn't into Twitter, and I thought, you know, what do I care what people are up to? But then I found, you know, some people use it as like a newswire, and they send out, you know, stories and stuff, and you can keep up to speed that way in a very quick manner. And you don't have to go use your phone. You can go to the Twitter website and look what people are talking about. And it's a lot of help to keep up with some of your favorite authors and other people out there who are letting you know, hey, you know, I'm going to have this interview here, or I'm going to be on this television station there, or so that you can keep up to speed with what's going on. So it is a cool thing, people. Check out Twitter. Check out UFO Daily News, Open Minds TV, Acentric, and Maureen has a new one, Space Geek Life. Right?
What?
Space Geek Life? Yeah, that's her new one, so you can check out her Twitter there, too. So we're all tweeting. We're Twitters. Someone who has a website and an active Facebook, but I don't think she has Twitter yet. I should talk to her about that, is Paola Harris, who is our guest tonight. She's a UFO researcher, has been for years, started working with J. Allen Hynek, who, of course, is I'm a huge fan of this guy, and we talk about him often. And I asked Paula about that, so let's go ahead and listen in on Paula Harris. I am happy to have a good friend of mine from Boulder, Colorado, although when I met you, you used to spend a lot of time in Italy, UFO researcher Paula Harris. Hello, Paula.
Hi, Alejandro. I have like 1 foot in here and 1 foot in Europe. I have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Europe has been really busy on this subject.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Europe. They've had a lot of sightings, and I'm working on 2 cases there. And believe it or not, one contactee case, and I'm always on the phone with him because a lot of interesting things are happening. And I wish I could just like fly across the ocean when these things happen, because just in general, and you and I have talked about this, this subject matter gets to be a lot more open in Europe sometimes than it is here. It's covered on the news, on the 6 o'clock news. It's covered in the newspapers and stuff like that. And here, I very rarely see UFO stories on any of the news channels.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot because I pay attention to all of the media, but really it's across the whole country. If you took one city, like let's say Denver in particular, you know, maybe a few stories a year, that's it. So across the country, there's a lot when you put everything together, but still each individual media organization only has a couple stories a year or something like that.
I guess I'm talking about television mostly because internet is filled stories.
Yeah.
You know, and I on the internet, I mean, I think anymore there could be a occupation called surfing the net there's for UFO stories, because so many are on the internet and they're put on by regular people. I mean, people that are everyday citizens that can upload their video and they can upload their experiences. But what I'm talking about in particular is mainstream media.
Oh, yeah.
News and top radio channels or television channels. And in Europe, I feel that that's probably much more open than it is here, because I'm always looking at CNN, they'll cover some kind of UFO story.
Gotcha. Yeah, I want to talk more about Europe in a little bit, but I wanted to start off with some of what you're working on lately. And something that's really exciting that you're working on is your own conference in Texas coming up in May, where your speakers, this is unique, the first time ever, are all going to be women.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think of what I could create that would be completely different, that would be a different kind of scenario than the regular UFO conferences that I've spoken at or that I've attended. And it just came to me that, and this is how it started, that Angela Joyner, who's a journalist that covered the Stephen Bell likes, really risked a lot for truth. She risked a lot because she was working for the Stephenville Tribune and really became interested in UFOs. And, you know, that caused a problem with her job. So I thought, what if I worked with Angela to have a Stephenville Lights panel? We were to give her an award for excellent journalism, and we would have the speakers be mostly women. In this case, all women, even though we have a panel of 4 men who are the chief Stephenville witnesses. And we have on Friday night the screening of The Hidden Hand by James Carman from New York. Now, you know he won the EBE Award last year for best film. So I have men at this conference, but what I'm doing is highlighting women, and I think that's a balance that kind of carries the balance for the regular UFO conference that is basically top heavy with men. There are so many really deserving, excellent women. Now, one thing you might notice when you see the banner for us is that there's no gadgets and there's no cartoons and there's no silliness, because we're calling it a symposium, a dialogue. And we're using, you know, like very serious background on it, because it will be like a dialogue. And people like Dr. Lynn Kitai is going to be one of our speakers. We'll talk about the effect of the Phoenix Light sightings on the mass public. And it's kind of the same effect that Stephenville had on its town down there, because it kind of changed their worldview. So it'd be interesting. We have Phoenix Lights and Stephenville Lights. And then we have Carol Rosen, who is an excellent speaker, who wants to talk about the space-based weapons and banning them in space. And she's very serious and passionate about what she has to say. And, of course, Lisa Romanak, who's going to be speaking for the first time in public about her role as the wife of a contactee, and I know you know her very, very well, the name of her book is The Other Side of the Bed, and she'll talk about what she's had to go through. So this is really exciting speakers.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, these are all people I know and are great people, so it ought to be kind of cool. And I think it's important, like you said, to add some balance and also to see that perspective, to see it through different eyes. I think it's important what you're doing.
Well, thank you. And it's just creative. It's very creative. And I've told the women, and this is going to be fun for everybody, because Texas is a wonderful place. I've been down to Stephenville and Glen Rose and that area. It'll be a big, like, Texas party. We're going to have a Texas barbecue on Saturday night. And then Steve Allen, who's the principal witness of the Stephenville Lights, is one of our supporters. And he's going to take everybody to the Oldham Ranch. He said it has a very, very unobstructed view of the sky where he saw this craft, this mile-long craft, and we're all going there for a Skywatch Saturday. Friday, we're going to have a cocktail party, and I'm asking the ladies all to wear red cocktail dresses. It's going to be called the Lady in Red Party. So, and that's when James Carman will also be, you know, screening his film. So I'm trying to make it fun for people. So I welcome men. In fact, half men have registered so far, half men, half women. And to make it something fun, but also something extremely intellectual and important.
Yeah, it looks like it's about, what, half an hour out of Dallas or Fort Worth? Is that the best place where people are flying into and then driving out?
Yeah, well, it's 1 hour, actually, out of Fort Worth. And you know, if they have, or people are having questions about carpooling, they can contact my company's called Starworks USA. I formed the company specifically for this event, and I'm hoping that it will just give a breath of fresh air to the dialogue on UFOs in a place that's fairly conservative about UFOs, and that's Texas. So it's going to be really interesting. The Stephenville Lights for me, though, Alejandro, as a journalist, is very, very important, because I just interviewed Steve Allen, and the fact that someone like him, who's a pilot and businessman, can really, be affected by this. In my interview, I asked him, I said, what would you say to the people? Because you didn't expect this to be real. And he just said to me that he had asked President Bush, who lives down the road in Crawford, Texas, his words were, "The gig is up, the cat's out of the bag, would you please tell us what's going on?" So I really liked it when the average, citizen, it wants disclosure like Steve does now.
Mm-hmm. Now, how far away is your conference from Stephenville?
30 miles from Stephenville,
okay.
And the sighting was actually between Glen Rose and Stephenville on the Oldham Ranch. It was between, it was on a ranch. And Mike Oldham has agreed to have us there on Saturday night. And you know something, I didn't realize that the phenomenon is still going on. The people are still seeing orbs and lights in the sky, in those towns.
Interesting. Now, maybe Steve Allen, you said he actually talked to President Bush?
No, he went on, he's been on radio, he's been television, he's been on radio, he's been on television, he's been in the media, and his words to Bush are, but this is when, Bush was in the White House. He basically said, it's time for truth, you got to tell the truth, and this, you shouldn't be hiding this from the people.
Right.
He believes that whatever political structure is in place should be telling the truth to the people, and that isn't always, and that really surprised me, because I thought that this phenomenon would kind of scare him, and he really thinks that that whatever it is harmless. He said, whatever it was in that craft was aware that I was there. He said, it knew I was looking at it, and it wasn't doing any harm. And then he described the two F-16s that came out of nowhere and were good.
Yeah. Go ahead and explain who Steve Allen was and what happened to him, what he experienced during the sightings.
Well, he explained to me in the interview that it was one night that, you know, of it was January 8th, 1998, and basically some friends of his and Mike Oldham asked him to bring over some beer because they have a dry county over there, and Steve lives in a wet county. I guess in Texas, you know, there's dry counties and wet counties where you can have alcohol and not. And so Steve got the beer. He went over to the ranch. He said it was an unusual sunset. He said there was this really strange-looking cloud in the sky, very unusual. And he said he turned around, and in the sky he saw these lights. He said it was like almost a transparent kind of huge craft sitting there with these orbs around it, these lights around it. And he said they all saw it, and he said he was kind of dumbstruck by it. It really surprised him because he's a pilot and he knows he's never seen anything like this. So he knew that it was not an airplane. He couldn't figure out what it was, but within minutes he said two F-16s came and this thing just shot away.
Wow.
And then it came back and they could see it in the sky a little bit farther. He has some interesting artist renditions of this. He is curious as to what it is. When Angela Joyner did the story with him, he did something pretty amazing, Alejandro. He had his telephone number put in the newspaper, something that is very courageous to put your telephone number in the newspaper. Because
yeah.
I asked him, why did you do that? And he said, because he said, anybody that saw it or took a picture of it would verify what I saw. And he said, it's so unusual that I needed verification from other people. He said, I needed somebody else to say they saw it. You know, mm-hmm. in the county, or maybe somebody give me a picture of it. So that's when, it just opened up a can of worms, and people called him, including Leroy Gayton, who was a constable, and he had to talk Leroy into coming forth because Leroy had told him, I'm a public official, this isn't proper, and Steve said, yes, it is. You have to be honest. You saw it with, I think he saw it with his son. He said, you have to talk, you have to speak up. So it was a matter of convincing these guys to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in a place like that, too, in a quite conservative country, you're thought of as crazy if you report things like that. So it changed the whole entire town. It changed everything. And they're still wanting to discuss it. So I'm excited that the four, that actually three, Ricky Sorrells, Leroy Gayton, Steve Allen, and then Robert Powell, who did the radar reports for MUFON, will be in that panel.
Cool.
MUFON involved, and when MUFON got involved and got some solid, in fact, Steve Allen gave me the pages of radar reports, a lot of them blacked out, about the real incident, then we have something concrete. We have MUFON moving in. And I'm going to add something else, Alejandro, at my conference, MUFON Texas will be sponsoring us by driving in the women speakers. MUFON Phoenix with Stacy Wright and Jim are sponsoring Lynn Katai. MUFON Denver will be the ones giving the award to Angela Joyner. And MUFON Arkansas will be down there covering the story. So I have four MUFONs from four different states that are really interested in networking.
Oh, that's very cool. I didn't realize that. And I think that sort of thing is another thing that's really important is teamwork, you know, everybody working together on these sort of events.
Well, yeah, but that's my vision. That's why it came about. I really think that they don't know each other, these MUFON groups. So when they get together to work on something together, like they're working on the conference, people like MUFON Denver is going to give the award to Angela Joyner. I mean, I think that's just incredible. And MUFON Texas has done so much, and with Robert Powell doing the radar reading, it gives MUFON a real important stance in this, and they are a great organization.
Yeah, I thought that when it all happened personally,
that Angela Joyner should have gotten an award from MUFON, and it's great that they're participating in this because she was so important in getting this story to be as big as it was. And also, she was key. She was the one who really got MUFON on Larry King when she was on there. She even said, you know, you shouldn't have me. Everybody's already interviewed me. You need to have these MUFON guys, Robert Powell and Glenn Schultz, who did this radar report. And they said, no, we still want you, but okay, we'll have them too. So she was really great, a big help back then.
Well, she also believes in network. See, women believe in networking. It's because, you know, something, if we could all work together, this has always been my thinking. If we could all sit at the table and share our research, we get to the secret a lot faster than hanging on to it or the infighting or the jealousies or whatever it is that there is in the field. If we could all just have like a big, you know, study group, we get to this this secret and this mystery. We'd be able to solve a lot more of it a lot faster. So my thought is always networking, and I'm excited about having these four MUFONs come down. They're all from different parts of the country and be part of this conference.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't realize they were doing that. I wanted to ask you your opinion as far as women in ufology. I mean, they are often, you know, there are some times when there'll be conferences where there are no women speakers, but it does seem like, are there less women researchers in UFOs or do they just have different interests? What do you think the difference is?
Well, you know, quite honestly, I think it's hard for women to be in this field. I was told early on in this field that I should stop getting involved in my nice little stories. I was told this by a top-level researcher that I didn't that women get emotionally involved and they're not objective. I think I'm one of the most objective nuts and bolts people on the whole planet. The thing is for the longest time, it's been in a male-dominated field. And I don't think they think necessarily of including women all the time. One of the greatest tragedies of all, Alejandro, and it's on my Facebook right now, is the fact that we never invited Georgina Bruni here. Georgina Bruni was a top-level researcher in England. She's a friend of Nick Pope's. Nick talked to me at length about her, how excellent she was in the Rendlesham Forest, Bettwaters case. And she had the nerve to go up to Margaret Thatcher. You know, the movie's out now, The Iron Lady. She had the nerve to go up to Margaret Thatcher at a party and say, I know Bettwaters, Rendlesham Forest, something landed there. And I know that's a real case. And Margaret Thatcher turned around to her and said, well, you better get your facts straight and you better not tell the people. So Georgina Bruni wrote a book called You Better Not Tell the People. Now, we never invited her here for any conference. Now, here she's a major player. And she passed on 2 years ago. I think it was about 2 years ago. So she's no longer with us. So on my Facebook, I have a tribute to her because she's a woman that I think we should have speak here. Mm-hmm. In a lot of our conferences, we don't share. I know we had Essin Sakarara from Turkey here quite often, and I admired her. The only reason I mention these women from other countries is because, you know, I think that ufology should be international. Of course, we have the excellence of Linda Moulton Howe and Leslie Kane here, and they speak often, but there's a lot of other women in the field that do not get the opportunity to speak as much and are not necessarily included with the what you call the in-group sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that for me, when I think about my mentors in this field and people who I really appreciate and have worked closely with, it's mostly been women. There have been, you know, a couple guys, but it's mostly women right now even that I, you know, my go-to people and stuff like that. There are a lot of influential women in the field. And do you think it's partially, I kind of hope that as the field changes, right now I don't think it would be inaccurate to say that it's dominated not just by men, but older men and who come from an era of, such as, you know, the Mad Men kind of era, the era where, you know, there was good old boy type of things were the way business was done. And hopefully as time changes, you know, with people like my generation, we're not used to that. We're used to working with women and you know, having women as bosses and working together. And hopefully that'll change over time.
Yeah, well, let me add, because you and I worked together. You were my webmaster mm-hmm. many years. And I'm grateful to you. If I hadn't had you, but you, what you did was help me get the information out by working my website and working with me. And we did a couple of conferences. In fact, you used to do a conference in Denver every year, and you invited me. I mean, but you're not the average mm-hmm. ufologist. I mean, you don't have that bias. You never did. And I don't know what to say. First of all, let's talk about ufology as it's something more than a hobby, okay? It's as a passion, a mission, or any kind of career. Mm-hmm. It's really a thing that doesn't produce any money. It doesn't give you. It certainly doesn't give you too much feedback. It's very difficult to work together because there's a lot of differences in the field. I mean, the amount of debunking that's going around is incredible, and it's being done by our own people. We don't even have to look at the field classes. I mean, ufologists are debunking other ufologists' work. And sometimes it's very unpopular with your family. A lot of people I know that are in the UFO field, their spouses or their families are not exactly excited about their doing this. It still presents ridicule. When people ask me, I'm an author and I've written, you know, 5 books and I'm a journalist, they'll say, well, what do you write about? Part of me just hesitates before I tell them. You know, part of me goes, I don't know if I should tell them. So sometimes I say, you don't want to know.
Right.
But what invariably happens is I say to them, okay, I write about UFOs. And they go, oh, that's so great. That's so cool. But I don't expect that reaction when I tell them. So it's unpopular. So there's a list of negatives around working in the UFO field. And I don't think women are, like men, or maybe the younger men too, aren't as excited to jump into it
mm-hmm.
as people were in the past. I mean, our icons of ufology, the researchers that have been around for a long time, have made a name for themselves. But the newer, younger generation is very difficult.
Yeah. Well, and when I say, you know, my mentors are women, I certainly count you among them. I mean, yeah, you were, it was wonderful when I got to live in Denver and we got to work so closely together. And I got to learn so much from your work, and I've always been happy to help.
Well, what was the name of the event they used to present every year at your area campus where you had Jeff?
Colorado UFO Briefing.
The briefing, absolutely. In fact, the picture of the brief, you used to do it on the stairs of Capitol.
Right, yeah, my very first one, we got a free speech license and did it right at the Capitol.
And the guests you had were amazing. David Sereda, you had Leo Sprinkle, mm-hmm. you had, Ryan Wood. And here are these people standing on the steps of the Capitol talking to the general public. I mean, you had an incredible vision there. Then you went indoors, but you're the first one who had Jeff Peckman speak. I mean, you're responsible. And let's face it, Jeff Peckman did more for the cause as far as actual activism than almost anybody I know. I mean, he was able to get 36,000 out of 72,000 voters to vote yes for an extraterrestrial ballot initiative. I mean, that's unheard of, 36,000 people pressing the button for yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you started with that at the briefing, and Jeff Peckman's mission started there, you know, about getting this into the offices of our elected officials. And see, I think that's the way to go, because it doesn't put it in the fringe element. It doesn't make it crazy. And so it doesn't make it something that we shouldn't be looking at. I think we definitely should be looking at this. This is something, an ongoing phenomenon that changes our entire worldview, like it did Steve Allen's down in Stephenville, Texas.
Mm-hmm. What did he think about you? Was he really into UFOs at all before he had a sighting?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. No. I mean, it's like with Angela either. Angela
right.
wasn't into it either. it's like once you touch this subject, you become obsessed by it, and you want to know more. You want to know how long it's been going on, where these things have been happening, what the cover-up is all about. So I think he's very, in a very responsible way, asking who knows about this? Who, in other words, where, how is it being hidden? And he's convinced somebody knows, like we all know somebody knows. And I hate to say the government, because the government, I honestly believe this government, the elected officials, do not know anything about anything about this. The last thing they want to deal with is UFOs. I think the who knows about this is that select group that manages it. And what do you call them, the black ops people or the military industrial complex or the intelligence community? It's that group that manages the information about this that knows. I don't think your average congressman, senator, maybe even the president is even aware of the intricacies of this cover-up.
Right. Yeah, it's funny that you go there, and it's interesting that you, because a lot of people who have been in this field come to the similar conclusions. I had Grant Cameron on last week. I've had him on often as well. But that, yeah, the politicians in it, we see this over and over again, even with Barry Goldwater or Bill Clinton. They want to know something, but they just can't. They're not told anything, and they're not in the loop.
They're not in the loop, and those people would have been asked to be in the loop, like the Barry Goldwaters and Stephen Schiff and different governors that may want to know. They only know because they happen to live in states where something has happened. And then they open like the can of worms or the Pandora's box, and then that they are told to keep quiet because they don't need to know. It's a matter of a need-to-know basis. So what I'm looking at as a journalist anymore is I'm looking at which countries outside of the United States are doing the most. And I'm looking at France always, because France started with the Cometa report, but I'm convinced they're working on another report. And England, and, you know, they're slowly releasing more information. Of course, at the UFO Congress, you have, I think, a military man from Chile, which is going to be very interesting, you know. And so Chile is looking at Brazil. Brazil is now has some files released. These are government files. I mean, people can't play the game of do you believe in UFOs, because it's not religion. Do we believe that some governments are releasing files that report UFOs in the air because military have come up against them or commercial airlines have come up against them? Yes. Are they real? Absolutely. The trouble is we're not sure what's inside and where they come from.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you bring up Europe, I did want to talk about that and get your perspective, because you, like you said, you spent a lot of time out there. You're kind of like a superstar in Italy. You know, you've traveled around Europe talking about UFOs. And it seems like what's interesting is there are very different perspectives when you go country by country. You have France, that's the poster child for taking this subject on probably the way we wish that everybody would. They're doing real research. You have England, which has kind of released some papers, but they still kind of make fun of it. And then you have like Germany, who says, you know, they're really, no, we don't care about UFOs. We've never investigated them. And giving this guy recently trouble, who is trying to get this file released that shows, yes, you did at least at one time investigate UFOs. And it's a file he knows exists. So you have from country to country, are the people like that from country to country with really different perspectives?
Yeah, I really do believe that there, you know, there is a different perspective. But, you know, in the overall, in 2012, where we are now, where there's so many other concerns and countries have so many problems with economics and, you know, the rising price of gas and people are hungry and they have all kinds of other problems. The governments of these countries do not want to touch UFO with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. They do not. However, I have to say you have a speaker in your conference that I'm coming purposely to hear, and that's Lee Spiegel. Because at one time, if one country as small as Grenada could get a resolution into the United Nations, and Lee Spiegel was very important in getting that together, you know, with Alan Hynek, Jacques Vallée, and Gordon Cooper, in the 70s. If he could actually do that, I mean, he could actually push that through to at least a dialogue part, even though it didn't get to be voted on, then maybe some little itty-bitty country out there will push it through to the United Nations level, a country that is not, you know, worried about starving people or the economy or their banks or any other thing. Maybe a smaller country might do it. And if that happens, then we might open this up to the world and have an intelligent discussion. And I really love Lee Spiegel's attitude and activism in his way of approaching this, because it's a legitimate way. It's a planetary way. This is not an American problem. This is not an Italian problem or a British problem. It's a planetary problem, and we, the planet, should deal with it. So he writes for the Huffington Post right now, and I really think that his vision is one where, you know, I'd like to put my energy into. I mean, we can't work for individual countries, and there's so much going on right now. People aren't necessarily tuned in, but if it would get to the United Nations, it might be an answer.
Right. Yeah. And it seems, you know, yeah, I Lee Spiegel, I love that guy, and I've had him on a couple times now, just recently even. And we talked about, you know, how the whole UN thing came about. And actually, I have an article coming up in our next Open Minds. You have one in there, too, where I do an interview just focused on that, because it's incredible, you know, that they were able to make that happen. And people forget, you may remember a couple years ago when there was this rumor of the UN having some meetings in a back office, and people were getting real excited. But it was like, for those of us who knew about this other UN initiative that happened in the 70s, like, big deal. You know, there were people in the 70s bringing this to the floor, talking to the general session about UFOs in the past.
Well, you know, it is, I mean, even though I truly believe that the phenomenon is benign, it is a matter of national security. You're going to need to tell your pilots that they may have an incident and what to do when they're up there. You can't have the pilot, like Jean-Jacques Dubois, have a huge UFO over Paris and not know what to do because he has all the passengers in the back. Mm-hmm. I think that's unethical. And not only that, it could be a matter of national security, and that they're in other countries' airspace. So we could look at that, should be alone something that would open it up. But Alejandro, there was another situation in 1998 at the San Marino conference in Italy, where Colonel Corso was there. I was there. I was present. And we had representatives from every country, including, right. Yeah, we had Gilles Baudet from France, Michael Hessman from Germany. We had Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs. We had Yvonne Smith was there. Yvonne is one of the only women that has really traveled the world with this UFO situation, and Colonel Corso was there. And because San Marino was an independent republic, it has hardly any army. It didn't have any stake in you know, being criticized. It was such a small country. There was a resolution paper signed there that Corso signed, and all the people present signed to bring it before the General Assembly. So did they end up doing it? No, because I guess San Marino had an election, and the Prime Minister of San Marino after that, the governor, the Prime Minister, didn't agree with Casales, who was the one at the time who was there. And so the thing is, that's interesting, is that we tried to do it through another small independent republic, and it never got off the ground, because it has to be introduced by a country that is not going to be either embarrassed or have a stake in it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's an interesting perspective, and I'm glad you're writing about it, because that is a possible way to go. We need to go past the sighting stage. You know, we've got enough sightings to prove that it's real. We need to go now to more of an activist political stage.
Mm-hmm. Having more insight into European kind of activism in this field, do you think there's any breaking country? Do you think we're going to hear something from another European government, or are they just too busy with their economic woes right now?
Well, I think you're going to see another Cometa.
Mm-hmm.
You think France is not going to give this up?
Yeah.
France is interested. And, I mean, you know, you've heard Stephen Greer say a big G8 country has contacted him. Well, it's obvious he's made so many allusions to France. We know it's France. I don't think France wants to be caught unprepared for any kind of phenomenon that may happen. You know, in the end, this is all in the hands of the ETs. If they decide to show up over an airport or show up over a city and there's a bunch of them, we can't do anything about it. That's what's so funny about this.
Mm-hmm.
So far, they've decided not to play that, not to do that, not to manifest in en masse anywhere. But I mean, should they decide, something should be put in place, something other than shooting them down. I mean, something that would be, diplomatically okay should be put in place. And I think France is probably the only country that is looking into this with any kind of seriousness. Mm-hmm. About what could be put in place. And even if it never happens, at least, you know, people are prepared. And I think that's why I really, you know, originally I wanted to go into exopolitics for that reason, because it was kind of a political, strategic, galactic protocol type of thing. I've kind of backed away from it now. I have a brand new book that I've re-released called UFOs, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light? It will be released February 1st, and I will have copies at the International UFO Congress in Phoenix. And I have 9 protocols of this type in that book, because I think we should be prepared. I think we should be prepared on all levels. Also on the level, Alejandro, to when we're looking up in the sky to try to make a difference as to what's our stuff for their stuff. I mean, you know, all that controversy now about the Belgium UFO, that it was some kind of back-engineered technology.
Mm-hmm.
And good grief, if that starts happening, we're really in trouble. We'll be shooting at our own stuff.
Right.
It's like complicated for me. It's not only complicated, it's serious.
Yeah.
We don't know. I don't believe in shooting at UFOs, even though poor Milton Torres was asked to do that in the Air Force over England in 1957. He was asked to shoot, lock on and shoot a UFO. And this came out of the British files. But, I mean, anymore, it's so complex to feel that if we don't look at what's going on, we'd be making a whole bunch of mistakes and putting ourselves in jeopardy. So one of the things that I really believe in is an intelligent, also informed kind of academic dialogue about UFOs. None of this silliness anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another aspect of European ufology, and maybe one of the reasons why they've kind of adopted the exopolitics idea is because you have stated over and over that it's taken much more seriously, the whole UFO thing out there, that their UFO conferences don't have little green blow-up aliens or some of the stuff that we have at our conferences out here.
Yeah, but can you imagine? I mean, I've seen hotels where there are some very serious researchers, some top-notch people, some anthropologists, some scientists who are speaking, and outside there's all these gadgets and these T-shirts and so forth. The general public that walks by that is not going to take this subject seriously. You know, they're going to start laughing. Mm-hmm. We don't have that because we don't have the commercial aspect. America has a serious commercial aspect around everything. It's not just about little aliens. I'm trying to avoid that in Texas. I don't want any little aliens or UFOs hanging from the air or anything like that. I don't want any of that. People are welcome to sell their books and to dialogue with the speakers and so forth. But I don't want that part because, in a way, I think there's a lot of things that have happened with the UFO phenomenon that is quite serious. It's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for the general public to take it seriously, and Europe, who comes to these conferences, but you know, in Europe, they don't charge that much. Most of them are free, and this is another situation. So you can get a lot of more people, and you get professors, and you get astronomers and meteorologists, and you get a lot more teenagers and university kids. I mean, one thing I don't see anymore is young people. I mean, I really think the real challenge for us in ufology is how to get young people interested in this so that they study this like they would a science project. I mean, how do you do that? That is a real interesting challenge for all of us. And I really do care because, you know, I'm an English teacher by trade. I have a master's in education. So, of course, I'm interested in the younger generation. How can you have a dialogue with these guys when you can't even get them to come into a conference?
Mm-hmm. And I want to tell everybody, paolaharris.com. I don't know if it's paolaharris.com. Or also, they can go find out more about the conference at starworksusa.com. We'll repeat those URLs again later, but I want to make sure that we repeat them a few times so people know where to go, starworksusa.com, to go register for the conference, because it is going to be something exciting and new and different. It's May 18th to the 20th at Glen Rose, Texas. So it's going to be something exciting. I really hope I can make it. I'm not sure if I can yet, but I'm trying to arrange it. So hopefully I will. I probably will be able to make it, but I really want to get there.
See you, yeah, because it'll be something a little different, and it'll be we'll be going over the Stephenville case in detail, and it'll be, you know, I think there'll be a lot of information for everybody. Also, the fact that, and you just had her, Tracy Austin Peters is going to be my moderator, mm-hmm. and she's real exciting. I always call her the movie star. She's the woman that has a lot of charisma that will be able to introduce everyone. And we have a new speaker, Karen Grisham Nickel, who is an intuitive counselor, a hypnotherapist that has worked in Europe and Brazil. She was also a counselor for Fellini, the movie director. And worked in Italy quite extensively. She worked with on counseling and hypnotherapy with a group of minors in Virginia that had UFO contact in the mines there. And she was there a month, and she will talk about that. And she's just a very sensitive lady that has a lot to say about contact, and she'll be on Sunday. And she, believe it or not, was born in Glen Rose, Texas, and lives in Dallas.
Really?
Yeah, she lives in Dallas, and she came out of the woodwork. I was really shocked. She told me that about all of the people that she's talked to over the years, a lot of Hollywood people. She's an excellent, intuitive, but she's also a hypnotherapist that deals with contact scenario. And, I think that bringing in these new people, these people that have so much to say, and having questions and answers from the audience will really be exciting. And that's what we plan to do with her.
That sounds like fun. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about is your article that I kind of mentioned earlier. You're going to have an article in the next Open Minds magazine. And I think this is something great that you've done. You were able to interview Kim Arnold, Kenneth Arnold's daughter, and she gave you some interesting information about the UFO case that really is the one that's credited for kind of beginning contemporary UFO studies.
Yeah, you know, I had heard what had happened, and this is all, you know, coincidence, and you know me that all the coincidences in my life.
Right.
But I was on Coast to Coast, and Kenneth Arnold's granddaughter, Chanel, called in, said she was Kenneth Arnold's granddaughter. Of course, George Nuri's wanting her telephone number immediately, and mm-hmm. And a year later, she gets hold of me, and she says, my mother is Kim Arnold, and I will give you her telephone number. So I called her right away. And it took, we've had a dialogue for 4 years now. Kim reminded me it was 4 years. But the last 4 months, I've really tried to convince her to come forth and speak. And the reason why she didn't want to, even though a lot of people knew about her, was because her father had been hassled so much in his lifetime that he, in his old age, was very disillusioned, almost embittered by the UFO community. And he made a big circus out of this. And her father, who was a real accomplished pilot, when he saw the 9 UFOs between Mount Rainier, over the Cascade Mountains, between Mount Rainier and Mount Adams, you know, was very, very, it just blew him away because it changed his worldview too. He was very honest about what he saw and came forth And, you know, even I think in his book, in the book, The Saucers Have Landed with Palmer, that he wrote with Ray Palmer, he says that the FBI made him, offered to take a mental test and a physical test because for his own credibility. People came after him for the credibility factor. So he, like Steve Allen, was waiting for somebody else to report it. And this Captain Smith of United Airlines also reported seeing nine saucers when he was on a commercial flight and his crew saw it. So Kenneth Arnold and Smith were the two investigators of the Maury Island case up in Washington. Kenneth Arnold was waiting for other people to come forth to say they saw the same thing, because I know how that is. You probably think you're going crazy. You're the first one to report something like this. Now, when the general public or the news media asked him what it looked like, he said it looked like a saucer skipping over water. Well, you know what happened after that is the news media descended on his house, made his life miserable. He was married to Doris and had four daughters. Kim is the third youngest, and she basically remembered unpleasant, memories about all of this. And wow. I convinced her that her father was a piece of UFO history, that she had to come forth and talk to the people about what her father thought, because I'm curious what her dad thought. Her father had, I think, a total of 8 sightings. The third sighting he had, he was in the plane by himself. The craft, what he saw was something morphing right near the craft. She said that he even at that time, I think put the window down, she said, and tried to look at it. And it was morphing, she said, into a light that had like a pulsation to it, that he came to the conclusion that whatever it was alive. Now, this is what interested me, that it had a pulsation like a human heartbeat, and that it was intelligent, and that it was alive. So Kim's feelings and her mother's feelings and her family's feelings were that these were almost like disembodied entities, that these craft were alive, that they weren't just, metal. And this was something that a lot of other witnesses in the past had talked about, including Michael Wolff, about the craft being part of the pilot and there being one and there being alive, being communication, that it was a biological craft instead of a metal craft. And so this interested me, and I think in the interview that's in Open Mind, word for word, Kim Arnold will tell the public what her father believed about these craft and the fact that he had more than one sighting.
That's the piece that people didn't know, he had more than one sighting. That's really interesting. Did she say, was that morphing sighting the other one that had the most effect on him? Was there another one that was really shocking to him?
What was that one? She said the second one were 9 orbs that looked like geese flying, but they were gold. Mm-hmm. They were gold circles. So he had different kinds. He had the chevron kind, the 9 chevrons that were like V-shaped in the beginning. Then he had the second one was the gold orbs that he had seen. And the third one were these two that seemed to morph in front of the ship. Now, she said, and this is really interesting too, that there was a lot of paranormal stuff going on in her house. She said there was an actual globe of light came into their house.
Really?
Yeah, she talked about that. She said, now you know from Stan Romanek that a lot of stuff like that happens to him.
And other people who believe they've been abducted have experienced that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I think it was no accident that Kenneth Arnold was involved in all this, and that the residuals were that he had this beam of light or this ball of light come into his house, and they saw it go from room to room. So, I mean, you don't know what that stuff is. I mean, I imagine it's an intelligent ball of light of some kind. She never talks about aliens. Her father never talked about aliens, and but was interested in other people's stories. In fact, she said her father had like boxes of clippings of UFOs. It's almost the same thing as like you become obsessed with it, so you start taking in all the information you can. And by the way, he's not the only one that used to be like that. You know, I knew Monsignor Balducci of the Vatican, and I would go over his house. He had boxes of UFO clippings, and he had all of them categorized, and he had everything from the paranormal. They were all shoved together, the paranormal and the UFO stuff. Very curious. So people that have any kind of experience like this, it changes their life forever, as you very well know.
Yeah, I mean, I believe you've said this too, and I feel that way. I know Angela Joyner feels that way. Never would have imagined, you know, decades ago, before getting into UFOs, that we'd be dedicating our lives to this subject. Just it seems so foreign a thought, you know, especially when I think of myself in college, and I remember this one guy had all these UFO theories. I had no inkling to throw my life into this, and it's just crazy that I've done that. And it's like, how did this happen?
Well, I almost think we signed up somewhere, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Where we signed, I don't know where we signed on the dotted line. I'm trying to think where that happened. For me, it began with Alan Hynek. So every time I see a picture of Alan, or every time I see Alan in Close Encounters come out with that pipe, or any time I think about Alan, it's just so emotional for me. It's just, it's like, in a way, I just am carrying out what he started.
You're going to love this article by Lee Spiegel then, because he did give us some pictures from the UN initiative that include Hynek. And there's some pictures I don't think people have seen before, and there are some really neat pictures of just them on the General Assembly floor, you know, talking about this stuff. So you're going to love those pictures. I also always – I don't want people to forget about Hynek either, because he was so important in this whole thing.
Yeah, and he didn't live long enough to see any kind of resolution. I remember he used to say, I wish I knew what was going on. I wish that they would tell me, because he believed somebody knew.
Yeah.
He did.
It's funny, because Don Schmidt wrote a story for the magazine recently about Hynek, and the last part was about that emotional piece where Hynek didn't get to see this all come to fruition. And everybody gets emotional when they read that. People get really sad.
Well, yeah, because, you know, he dedicated his life to – he was very open. And by the way, Alejandro, he was perfect researcher. He never made value judgments. He never belittled anybody. I never heard him criticize anybody. He was a great listener. He'd just sit there and look at you with that pipe, and he wouldn't say anything for, like, hours, and he was just listening, and perfect way of dealing with things, where all too often researchers, they make a judgment before they even get through the whole story.
Mm-hmm. And just in case there are some listeners who aren't aware, you worked as his assistant for a period of time.
Yeah, from 1980 to 1986 when he died. And then, you know, in 1986, I was so devastated, I don't want to do anything else in ufology until I moved to Italy in 92. And then that's when they found me, because they knew I had worked with Alan. But and that's when it really started over in Europe. But, you know, for people that want to see the ultimate movie about UFOs and the effect it has on entire families, and the effect it has on everybody, even the government, staging of the landing, they need to watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm. And they'll get to see Hynek himself in this little cameo.
Yeah, he comes out there. Alan told me that originally Spielberg had the aliens taking the pipe away from him and playing with it, and that was the little piece that they cut out of the film. They gave it to him as a gift. And then I don't know if people knew that Spielberg was on Alan's Center for UFO Studies. He was on his board of directors.
Yeah, something I learned on this last interview with Lee Spiegel is that Jacques Vallée, Hynek, and all went out to meet Spielberg in California. He wanted to meet and talk to him about their UN initiative when that was going on.
Oh, there's a lot about Spielberg we don't know.
Right.
I know.
I did want to mention one more thing about the Arnold. It's really interesting that he thought that the craft was alive. Of course, Trevor James Constable was a prominent researcher who talked about that, the space critters, about lots of these UFOs being alive. And I don't know if you know this, but that one image that Jason McClellan, you know, who works for Open Minds, he got a really good picture of what he thought was a living entity. This UFO, he thought it was living the way it was moving around the sky like a jellyfish.
Well, so did David Adair. Didn't he also say he was involved in some hidden projects where he said that the skin was biological?
Right.
It was biological skin on the craft. It was not made with metals, but I don't know, some kind of biology. And the idea that the EB or the extraterrestrial biological entity and the craft are one means there has to be some symbiosis or some kind of connection, whether it be electromagnetic or whatever, that the craft needs to be alive to respond to the pilot. So isn't that interesting? That'd be a great new opening for scientists to look at.
Mm-hmm. And it would seem it's possible. We're finding life everywhere. It's a matter of time. Even mainstream scientists feel it's a matter of time till we find life on another planet. Why wouldn't we be able to find it floating around out there in space? I know there were some Star Trek, I think, episodes that had stuff like that, and it seems entirely possible.
Well, it is, and I think that we, you just don't understand, we don't understand because we don't have the science to explain it, but even the balls of light, the pulsating balls of light around the STS-75 in that NASA mission, maybe that is just the high frequency of a metal craft, and when you go to high frequency, it appears as a ball of light. It isn't really light, but it's a change of frequency. So we've got a whole new science here we could be looking at if we took this subject seriously.
Right, and hopefully that will happen. Well, I'm excited to see you in a few weeks at the Congress. Like you said, you're going to be there selling some books.
Can I add, Alejandro, that I sponsored a Clifford Stone's book, which is called Eyes Only, where he talks about his crash retrievals, including the live and dead entities that he encountered, and I will be at the table with Clifford, and I'll have my new book and Clifford's new book, and Clifford will be there in person also.
Oh, great. So you'll both be there and
yes,
signing your books and selling your books the whole time.
Yes, we will, and Clifford's book is really an incredible book. Everybody should have that book in their library. It is the truth about what he lived, and he will be in person at the International UFO Congress. We'll be probably at the book table, both of us.
Cool, and it looks like on your website, and I'll tell people again, it's PAOLAHARRIS.com, PaolaHarris.com, and it looks like you have some information on Clifford's book at your website also.
Yes, I do, and for me, these books should be in everybody's library because they are the words of the original person. I mean, we're just the journalists, but these are the original people. And we've got to get them all while they're still all alive and able to speak.
Right. And then, of course, go to StarWorksUSA.com to register for this interesting and fun and unique event coming up in May.
Yeah, if they do early bird registration, it's only $75. If they wait too long, it becomes $90. So I really encourage early bird registration for this, which is pretty good for 3 days.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's a great price.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something different. We're going to have a good time and hope to see you there.
Yes, I hope to be there. And with any luck, I mean, they got some big skies out there in Texas. Maybe people have their own experience.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, great. Thank you so much for being on the show again, Paula.
Thank you, Alejandro. Good luck.
And if you are intrigued and you're thinking, who is this guy, Clifford Stone? My goodness, this sounds fascinating. Well, we did interview Clifford on the radio show about a year or so ago. I think it might have been when we were still UFO Think Tank. I know. In fact, it was, I think, because I had him speak at the Roswell conference a couple of years ago, the anniversary of the Roswell crash. But anyway, look into the archives for Clifford Stone. You'll find him there. Listen to the show if you want to know more about him. And then if you're just like, whoa, I need to meet these dudes, then, of course, you can always register for the conference at UFOCongress.com. Thank you all for joining us once again. Don't forget to visit openminds.tv and or, no, definitely and, UFODailyNews.com for the latest. Look for my Huffington Post blogs and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. It's been wonderful, and we will see you next week, people.